Hey everyone, and welcome back to Life, the University, and Everything, the podcast of mostly academics talking about stuff while drinking tea or some other beverage as we did today. Today I had our guest Emily LaCroix on, and we talked about sense of place, we talked about being an outdoors person, and also music and singing. Pull up a chair, grab yourself a cup of tea, maybe some boba, and don't forget to follow us on the socials at LUE Podcast.
Guilt, fighting feelings of guilt.
But then it like, but also catching up by Tuesdays.
Tuesday is definitively the worst day of the week.
Definitively.
In my opinion.
I'm Emily LaCroix. I'm a PhD candidate at Stanford. I study soil.
Cool. So I think the first portion of our show is always introducing what we're drinking. So I just made Emily and I black sesame lattes from black sesame powder that I bought. And it's much cheaper than what you find at Boba Guys.
And it's very delicious.
Yes. So I asked you a question of what's the most hashtag grad school theme that happened to you this past week? Did you
think about that? Oh my gosh. I did think about that. So I have you asked me a few things to think about. And it's funny because at first I was hashtag grad school. And then I thought of, I was okay, what bad things happened to me this week? It's honestly what I thought about. And then I was, wait a second.
Yeah.
Because I feel like when people say hashtag grad school, it's kind of this connotation of we're grad students. We have no money. We work too hard. Ha ha ha. Which in a lot of ways is true.
We're crying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think overall, I personally am having a pretty rosy, it's not always rosy, but rosy grad school experience. So
that's great.
When I think of hashtag grad school, rather than being oh my gosh, I'm not saving for retirement. I want it to be hashtag grad school. Today, I got to gaze at some soil and it was beautiful. Hashtag grad school being I study this thing, it's deeply interesting to me, and I feel really lucky that I get to do this interesting thing. It's not always super interesting or boring days, but so anyway, the most hashtag grad school thing that happened to me is I found this article or someone had shared an article on being able to grow plants someday in saline conditions. And so I looked up the paper, and it was primarily focused on the plant aspect of adapting plants to saline conditions.
Okay.
But there were many soil properties that they hadn't considered. And so I kind of spouted off to this group of people who had shared this paper, you have to remember the soil. This is only one part of it. So that was my hashtag grad school moment.
How did those folks react?
Oh, typical Emily. getting jazzed about the soil.
How long have you been jazzed about soil?
Oh, that's a good question. I kind of got into soil in a random way. So my freshman year of undergrad, I needed a job. It was approaching summer, and I was a chemistry major, and I was either gonna be a hostess at a restaurant nearby. So I went to school really close to where I grew up, and so I was okay, I don't really want to be a hostess again. Maybe I can ask around different labs and see if I can get a job. And I just was googling professors at my school's names. And I found something called biogeochemistry, and I was oh my gosh,
so many prefixes.
I know. I was I like the environment. I like chemistry. Let me just randomly email this person. And I randomly emailed my undergrad advisor, Andy Friedland, and he he's like, sure, we could use some help. And I got a job. So, like, they paid me to be a field assistant. And it was a soil lab, I guess I should say. And so at first, I don't know. I think I was, like, jazzed at first field trip, I guess I should say. We worked in these, like, really beautiful old growth forests in New Hampshire. And it just, like, the soil smells really good. So I've been jazzed about soil, all that, that's a long answer, for, oh my gosh, how many years ago was that now? That would have been 2012. So
7 years. Wow.
Wait. It might be more than that. No, it was 2012.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. That sounds like a good time for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That's pretty significant.
Yeah.
So then now a lot of your friends just know you as person who's jazzed about biogeochemistry or jazzed about soil or what different labels come up in your identity as a scientist.
Yeah, it kind of depends where I am. Like obviously in my lab group with other people who study soil, they don't, you know, we're all kind of equally jazzed about it. So
yeah.
I don't really identify as like woman who's really into soil there, but I think a lot of my friends from home see me as really sciencey, like they rather than like soily.
Okay.
And my partner, he works in tech, and so sometimes I'll hang out with his coworkers and friends who also work in tech. And I think they think I'm just like a huge like nature enthusiast.
Interesting.
Which is like partially, I mean, it is true. I enjoy nature, but I think whenever I like remark on the natural world to them, they're like, ha ha ha, Emily is fulfilling this caricature of herself. Like, she has pointed out a slug. Nature.
Are you okay with that? Or
yeah, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I mostly just like want to find other people who want to like look at slugs with me, which sometimes I can find, but
yeah,
you know, not slugs literally, but like in the metaphorical sense of just like observing the natural world.
Yeah. So let's jump back to like maybe even childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Were you always into nature? And tell us about where you grew up and how that affected your interests.
Yeah, so my life geography. I was born in Rhode Island, and then when I was like one, my mom and my dad moved to Florida with me and my younger sister. And we lived in Florida until I was 10. So my parents got divorced and my mom got remarried. And then we added another sister to the family. And my mom, by that point, had 3 young kids and really missed New England. We were living in Central Florida. And my mom and my stepdad in particular did a really good job in Florida of, even though we lived in this kind of suburban environment, we lived in a suburb of Orlando, of getting us out to, like, go canoeing and go roam around the woods. And, like, we had, like, little kid mountain bikes.
Mm-hmm.
So we were outside a bit, but I don't remember when you're pre-age 10. I don't really know how much you're, like, aware of your identity. Or at least I don't know how much I was.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really, like, feel like nature was part of my identity then.
Mm, okay.
And then we moved to New Hampshire, and my dad stayed in Florida. So it was, we moved to New Hampshire, and we lived in this really rural place. So I'm from Canaan, New Hampshire, which is just outside of Lebanon and Hanover, if anyone has heard of these places.
I've heard of Hanover.
Yeah. So I did my undergrad at Dartmouth. So when I said, like, I grew up really close to where I went to undergrad, I grew up, like, in a town adjacent to Hanover.
How many minutes was that?
Like 30 minutes, yeah. But everyone, my hometown is so small that everyone commutes in to Hanover and Lebanon for work. So anyway, we moved to rural New Hampshire, and I think It was primarily through, like, living in a rural place where the access to the types of activities that you can do is limited. So, like, already, like, what you can mm-hmm. kind of be interested in and feasibly, like, take action towards it is limited.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of friends who were just really active, and their parents were really active, and we just spent a lot of time outside. So, like, mm-hmm. a lot of my, you know, more bucolic memories of growing mm-hmm. up are, I would ride my bike to my friend Lydia's house, and then, like, we'd ride our bikes to the lake, and then we'd hop in, and in high school, I started running cross country, and so I would just run outside every day in the summer, or in the fall when we'd have meets, we'd get to run through these beautiful forests in New Hampshire.
Mm.
And I think just, like, kind of the mix of, like, probably endorphins and happening to be outside at the same time formed this positive association in my mind that, like,
yeah.
Nature is incredible and, like, I love being outside. So, yeah, I was probably in my preteens to
yeah.
teen years when it really came into full.
Do you have any associations with being inside?
Oh, like positive ones?
Positive or negative?
It depends. When I moved, in general, I do not prefer to be inside. When I first moved here, it was an issue because in New Hampshire and Wisconsin, which was another place I've lived, like where I've lived in my adult years, the weather is bad a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And so anytime it's sunny or nice and I have to be inside, it feels like I'm wasting my day. So I'm like, oh my gosh, this is such a like waste of this opportunity to like take advantage of how sunny and nice it is outside.
Right.
And now that I live here, like when the first few months I was like, oh my gosh, every day I was like, I'm not outside.
Every day is a waste.
I'm at my desk. Like, it's a waste.
Yeah.
And then I realized, like, okay, it's not, like, having good weather is not as much of a, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Limited resource.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
For now.
So, like, being outside, like, kind of brings up FOMO.
Yeah. Or, yeah, being inside
it's
gives
not,
me FOMO feelings.
It's not that being inside is bad, it's that, like, being inside is not outside when the weather is good.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
I mean,
yeah.
If it's raining and 40 degrees, like, give me a book. Send me indoors. But,
right.
Yeah, otherwise, yeah.
Okay.
Inside FOMO or outside FOMO, I guess.
Yeah, so how were your college years?
Oh my gosh, what a fraught question.
Holy moly. Tell me about your college years. Okay.
Hey, buckle up, everyone. Yeah. My college years were really interesting, I guess. So I went to Dartmouth College. I call it a fancy pants school, is how I described it. And I grew up really close to it. And so I actually only applied to Dartmouth. I was like, well, may as well apply. The supplement's pretty easy. And if it ends up being, like, the best and cheapest school I get into, maybe I'll go there.
Yeah.
Lo and behold, it ends up being, like, the most affordable school after financial aid.
Right.
And so and I got in, which was exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ended up going there. But growing up so close to it, Hanover and Dartmouth, and just, like, the town of Hanover in general in my community was always kind of seen as this, like, really snooty place.
Mm.
There's a lot more wealth in Hanover than there is in Canaan. And so, like, going to Dartmouth, I already had, like, kind of these feelings of, like, this is where, I don't know, like, fancy people go. And that's,
yeah.
It wasn't to say that, you know, I didn't feel super fancy. I don't know. It's not that, like,
right.
I was...
It's like a degree of fanciness one has to attain.
Yeah. I already just, like, came in with some feelings of, like, I'm not sure if this is my place. And,
Especially if you moved to New Hampshire when you were, like, 10. 10 or 11.
Right? Yeah.
And you went to college when you were like 18. Mm-hmm. It's like years and years of sort of immediate impressions. Not even just like, oh, Princeton is a faraway place with fancy people.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, this is a fancy place, like, nearby.
Yeah.
That's
and I used to, like, do my homework in the Dartmouth Library in high school.
Interesting.
Just because, well, we didn't have any places in Canaan where you could, like, work with your friends or, like, work in a quiet place that had reliable internet. I mean, maybe home, but home wasn't always quiet,
right?
Yeah. So anyway, I came in with a lot of feelings, and I ended up ultimately going there. And I was excited, but it also felt like a really big deal to me. Like, I didn't want to squander this opportunity to go to this, like, really fancy place. And so I also saw college as this thing where you, and I still see it primarily in this function, like, let me back up. Growing up, my parents college was always framed as, like, you go to college so you can get a employable degree to, like, get a good job.
Right.
Which I don't think everyone goes into undergrad.
Everyone has different sort of utilities of undergrad.
Yeah. And so I was like, my utility of this place is, like, I'm gonna learn so much.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna, like, do chemistry forever and, like, just work really, really, really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think not all of my peers felt that way. Dartmouth is really, like, Greek life-y, which I just really wasn't into.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. It wasn't my place socially. Like, I obviously, like, eventually found friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in a cappella group, so I was, like, friends with all my, like, singing friends. And I had a handful of friends in other places that I'm really good friends with now. But I didn't always feel, like, I just felt very out of place basically the whole time. And
yeah, that was going to be my question, sort of, how did this, like, grow or diminish before arriving, upon arriving, and then, like, through the 4 years?
I think it diminished over time. Like,
okay.
By my fourth year, I'm like, whatever. Like, I have friends. I'm doing fine.
Yeah.
I figured things out. But my first year or two, I think, were really difficult in terms of just feeling like an oddity, which, I don't know, it really wasn't that big of a deal, but I felt like a stick in the mud, I think is the best way to describe it. Like, I've been an old woman at heart since I was like 10, and it was hard for me to find peers who also, like, wanted to stay in on a Friday night and like knit or do whatever. But by the fourth year, I realized, like, that, you know, me enjoying those things wasn't bad. It's just I can enjoy them on my own and, like, not feel ashamed of having that be my thing. But yeah, anyway, my other, like, kind of big view of my undergrad is I think I worked too hard. I think a lot of people look back. Well, I have other friends who look back and goes, like, oh my gosh, like, I did nothing in undergrad, or, like, I partied so much. And I don't know how I sustained the effort that I put in day in and day out. I mean, it was like sleeping 6 hours a night.
Yeah.
Every night for like 10 weeks at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you wake up in the morning, you start working. Maybe you have lunch or dinner with a friend. Maybe you have a rehearsal. But other than that, like, all of my hours were spent doing work for the most part.
Yeah. And was it very, like, individual, or were, like, by the end, did you find people who you were working with all the time, or was it motivated by your, like, individual?
I'm primarily a solo studier.
Okay.
By my senior year, one of my really good friends, Alina, if you ever listen to this, hi. She and I were study buddies, but It was mostly solo.
It's interesting, like, that you look on that in hindsight. When did you begin to feel that you were working too much? Was it, like, 2 years after you graduated, or, like, were you aware of this?
No, it was my senior spring, so I wrote a senior thesis, and so I was able... I technically graduated a quarter early, but, like, stayed on campus as an RA to, like, write my thesis. And so I had a ton of free time because I basically had it done before the spring quarter had even started.
Awesome.
And I had such a fun time. Like, it was my first time where I was like, oh, my gosh. There is so much fun to be had, or one of the first times I realized that. And so to be honest, and this sounds kind of sad, but like I was filled with just so much regret upon graduation. Like the weeks leading up to graduation were so fun, and I'm happy that I had that time. But like, I just remember like the sadness I felt at graduation was like, I'm sad I maybe missed out on this opportunity to, like, really expand socially or, like, have a really wonderful time. And that's not to say that I'm, like, unhappy with who I am as a person like, I didn't have good relationships in college. It was just, like, that's kind of my overview of college is, like, I probably worked a little too hard.
That's fair.
Yeah.
It's also interesting connecting with your... feelings of being outside and your feelings of being inside. And sort of the FOMO of being inside. You're inside for 3 years.
It's true. I, like, didn't go outside that much in undergrad, and it's so sad because I was just studying.
But talk about music. When did your love for singing emerge, and how did that, like, interconnect with your...
I started singing in middle school, and then, but that's just, like, in, you know, middle school choir. Then in high school, I actually started taking voice lessons, and I was in musicals, so I took classical voice, so started singing, like, you know, arias and stuff, and then I also just, like, was in a bunch of musicals in high school, and I loved it. Like, that was my activity, and it continued into college. I played the oboe in middle school and high school.
Cool. Awesome.
But then I got to college and I was like, okay, no more oboe. There were like 5 oboes in my freshman class. And I'm like, I am not that good. But
I've never been in like orchestra or band or anything, but like, are there stereotypes or connotations with being an oboe?
Oh, I think so.
Okay.
Is just it... like a little bit quirky.
Okay.
I think that's the main connotation is it's like a quirky instrument. But, like, I feel like I meet other band people now, and I'm like, oh, like, you're such a trombone, or, like, typical trumpet.
Or trumpet's the loud people.
Yeah.
They love themselves.
They love themselves. But anyway, so I got to college, and I was like, I want to continue singing, and I knew I wanted to take voice lessons for credit.
Cool.
Because I was like, I want to continue doing this. It brings me a lot of joy. And then on a whim, I decided to try out for an a cappella group, The Sings. And I was so silly. And I got in, and it actually was probably like the most formative, socially rich thing I did in college. And it's weird because I'm like anti-Greek system, but if you think about it, like any of these exclusive small groups have like exclusion issues.
Or like a tryout period.
But that ended up being kind of my home on campus. And so like most of my best friends from college are from The Sings. I mean, we rehearsed 3 times a week for 2 hours for each rehearsal.
Whoa.
So that's like a lot of time.
That is. That's cool.
I don't think I see a single person other than my office mates like more than 6 hours a week.
Wow. Yeah.
Maybe my partner.
Maybe.
Who I live with.
So, like, but still. Yeah. What is it about singing that is therapeutic to you, or like perfecting your art?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I still sing a little today. I'm trying to bring it back into my life, but
mm-hmm.
it's hard to balance with other things.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the storytelling and the expression of it. I think once I got more into classicals, I started really liking musical theater as like a high schooler.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I got a little older, I came to realize that truly any song is really like musical theater, and that you're
okay.
conveying a message and an emotion. And I like kind of the emotional release is not the right word, but like tapping into certain emotions when you're performing a song. I also, this is going to sound kind of lame, but like I like making people happy when I sing.
That's cool.
I do not like making people sad or like distressed from hearing my voice. Not like sad, like this song is sad, but sad like, oh gosh, this girl, she just croaked. That's,
right.
That doesn't feel good. And you,
cool.
you have to be focused on that moment. It's one of those things where like I can't be thinking about like what's going on in lab while I'm singing the song.
Yeah.
Because I just won't sing the correct words or
yeah. You can't space out.
Yeah. You
yeah.
sing too, don't you?
A little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I my singing CV, I don't have one. But I enjoy it.
I
enjoy like being part of like choir stuff.
Yeah.
And last winter I did a quarter with the Stanford Gospel Choir.
Oh, that's amazing.
Really cool.
Okay.
But yeah. So now you said you're trying to bring it back to your life, or what's that
mm-hmm.
looked like in grad school?
Yeah. So for 2 years, so I took some time off between undergrad and grad school. And in those 2 years, I was limited primarily to shower singing.
Mm.
And then I got to grad school. A year went by, still singing in the shower. And I was like, it's probably making my neighbors angry. I should do something about this. And so I joined the Stanford Summer Choir, which was just really great. It was awesome. We got to sing in Bing Music Hall, which was amazing. It will be like the most beautiful place I'll ever sing in my whole life, I'm convinced. And then, last fall, I sang in like a small community choir called Collage Vocal Ensemble. And it's like primarily, I hope none of the people in Collage listen to this. Sorry if you're listening. The group is great, but it's primarily just like retired people from
awesome.
The Bay Area.
Okay.
But it's very interesting because that's kind of a demographic I don't interact with a lot.
Totally.
And I actually loved it. Like, I love being like, wow, like, I love hearing about your life not in grad school.
Right.
Like, please
so
remind me more about the outside world.
Yeah.
So it was,
awesome.
Yeah, it was really nice, but it was actually really challenging. Like, we sang a ton of music, and in the spring I was supposed to take my qualifying exam, and I was just like, I can't keep this up.
Yeah, yeah.
It's becoming
fair.
Stressful rather than fun.
Right.
So I did summer choir again this past summer, but now I'm back to, like, not doing much.
Okay.
But maybe I'll come back.
Yeah. Maybe. Your post quals.
My post quals life.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. So one of the questions I posed to you earlier was, what matters to you and why?
Yeah.
And how do you navigate that while being a PhD student?
Yeah. So first and foremost, being a good friend and family member is really important to me. I think that's probably, especially in the years like after undergrad, even during, basically my whole life until grad school, a lot of my identity was being a really good friend, and also being like a good, you know, daughter, sister, niece, whatever. And so that really matters to me a lot. Others, things, nature, the earth, appreciating the planet. I'm not going to Mars. I'm staying here. Yeah. So
committed.
I'm committed. We can talk more about that later. I have some fiery thoughts about it. And then also just the only way I could abbreviate this like third kind of amorphous idea is like, it's really important to me to honor the immense privileges I've been given in life. And like what that looks like is like, you know, being an awesome scientist, because like I'm so lucky to be here, and like I like am going to take this opportunity and like work as hard as I can. Because it is a shame that there are other people who have not been afforded the advantages that I have, who would work just as hard, if not harder. And that also means just like, I don't know, being a good ally to different oppressed groups, and kind of lifting people up when I can, and also like, part of honoring this, you know, immense privilege and luck that I've been given in life is also taking care of myself so I can keep doing these good things that I have with this opportunity I've been given.
Yeah.
And so as a PhD, I'm just kind of like, it feels like trying to rotate between these three things. I don't think I've really like... I don't know if it's possible to balance all those things. I think in an ideal world, I'd be like an amazing like sister best friend who like sends you a postcard every 3 days. And then like also like I'm planting seeds on my way to school. And also like I've attended every rally. Also I've won a Nobel Prize. And like, but I also went to yoga 4 times this week. And it's not possible to do all that. And so... just like trying
that was my question gonna be, is what does being an awesome scientist mean, or what does being awesome even mean? Does it mean doing the most or like
I don't know. I'm still trying to figure it out. I mean, for me it just means kind of like doing my personal best, and like I have a pretty good idea of what that is. And part of personal best, right, is balanced with, like, am I taking care of myself, right? So, like, you know, maybe it's possible I, like, crank through this data analysis in 3 days, but oh, wait, that will require me to not sleep. And therefore, like, maybe my analysis won't be as good. Or maybe I will be like kind of a cranky sister that week. So I think being an amazing scientist is just like, I don't know. I'm still trying to figure it out. I'm like,
totally.
If some weeks I'll like push the edge and I'm like, oh, worked too hard.
Too much.
And then other weeks I'll look back and I'm like, did I do enough? Like, I feel really guilty. And I mean, maybe that's my real hashtag grad school moment, is like feeling guilty for like leaving after working only 8 hours. Only 8 hours.
Right,
the air quotes, or hear them if you can. But anyway.
So talk about how those have interplayed with particularly being a good friend, a good daughter and sister. And being on different coasts.
It's really hard. So, I would say, I'll start with being a friend. So all of my, like, best friends in the world live in New Hampshire or Vermont. So, like, they're, like, all concentrated there. I mean, my best friend, we've been friends since the first day of fifth grade.
Oh, that's lovely.
I know. Thank you, Mrs. Hazelton, for putting me and Bea at the same table. But being on opposite coasts is really hard. I mean, there's a time difference. Also, I'm just not... I don't see my friends as often as I used to. And so part of that is, like, being open to letting your friendships adapt, right? Like, so I think some modes of friendship are, like, I know everything that's happening in your life. Like, I understand the context when, like, you found this lost sock. And that I don't have that type of friendship with those people anymore. But what I do have is, like, kind of this, like, nugget of faith and comfort that, like, you know, someone like Bea exists in the world, or like someone like Elena is like on her couch, like, I don't know, having a cup of tea. And so just kind of like adapting to that aspect of just being far away from everyone. And then now with grad school, part of it is just like I have less time. In the time between undergrad and grad school, I was, like, really into being a good friend. Which, like, I shouldn't say that, like, now I'm not, but...
No, yeah, there's a, like, interesting, like, recipe of, like, post-grad and wanting to be a good friend and then not being in grad school.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, I knit you a scarf for your birthday.
So
also, like, I sent you my stamp collection. And I never sent a stamp collection, but, like, I would knit people stuff for their birthdays or just, like, send them letters. Like, I'd spend my Sunday afternoon, like, sitting in a park and just, like, writing to people.
That's
and now
so lovely.
That doesn't happen, which
is
fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's totally fine.
At first, I was like, oh, my gosh, like, my friends are going to wither away if, like, they don't get letters.
Right.
And then I thought about it, and I was like, actually, no, they're all, like, strong, amazing women. You don't need letters from me to fuel them through their week, even though I want to send them. But, yeah. And then from a family perspective, it's also really hard. I miss my family so much, and... It's even just hard to talk to my mom on the phone. I talk to my dad a lot on the phone.
Okay.
He and I actually got really close after college. It's funny.
That's cool. Do you think you could just talk on the phone more easily together, or what has it been?
He's a really good phone talker, and also is just, like, free more often. My mom,
okay.
I think, just, like... doesn't really care for talking on the phone.
Okay.
So a lot of times I'll call, and, like, I can tell she's, like, doing three other things. And I'm like, okay, I'll call you later.
Yeah.
Bye, Mom.
Oh.
I mean, no, she doesn't mean to be like that, but, like, she has stuff to do. Like,
yeah.
And when I call, a lot of times, you know, if I don't leave the office till 6,
yeah,
it's already 9.
Ooh,
and, like, yeah, my mom's, like, getting ready for bed or whatever at that point. So it's definitely kind of, like, changed the extent of closeness I feel with my parents or my siblings. Also, both, so I have two younger sisters. One is, 25, and one is 16. I know, baby! But they live really close to each other. And my sister Sarah still lives really close to home. And so they, like, get to hang out. And Sarah gets to be there for Abby's, like, plays. And I don't know, whatever else Abby does. And it makes me feel left out, I guess. Or, like, I'm missing out on these times. Which is just sad. But my family doesn't, like, make me feel guilty or anything for being out here.
Yeah,
I know they're
totally
sad. Like, every time I, like, see my mom or leave my mom, there's, like, a good, like, 5 to 10 minutes of weeping. I know. I'm in my
mid to late 20s. Like,
okay.
Why is this still happening?
Yeah. It's strange.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that people don't really talk about a lot in academia or grad school.
Yeah.
People just expect academics to ship out to wherever. Mm-hmm.
And feel lucky to be, like...
Yes.
Like, getting a job. Like, I think
right.
about that, like, all the time. I'm just like, hey, after my PhD, like, what if I end up in Kansas? Like,
right.
I don't know anyone there. Like,
yeah.
I don't know if I want to live in Kansas.
Yeah,
but
totally.
Nothing against Kansas.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, how important to you is your sense of place? And how has living in Palo Alto affected that?
Mm. Mm. That's a good question. I think I'm realizing more and more that sense of place is really important to me. After undergrad, I lived in Madison, Wisconsin for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I loved living there. I think that it was really friendly.
Mm-hmm.
It was my first time. I also just had so much more free time. So, like, in undergrad,
mm-hmm.
I was working
yeah.
constantly.
Ugh.
And in the working world, I'm like, wow, like, 40 to 50 hours a week, like, I still have so much time.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
like, wow, I have a real job. Like, I have money for the first time ever. And, like,
yeah.
look it, I have a coffee table now. I don't know. It was just,
yeah.
like, everything, like, the parts
mm.
of adulthood. Adulthood just still, like, felt really novel and exciting.
Mm.
Like, I'm proud of myself. Like, I went grocery shopping.
Right.
And so I already had, like, kind of those positive associations with Madison.
Mm.
I also met my partner, Joe, there.
Mm.
So we, like, that was really happy. I was like,
right.
I'm in love. I have a job. There's money.
Like, yeah.
The people are so friendly.
Aww.
The cheese is delicious.
Like, I do love cheese.
Yeah. And, oh, my gosh.
Great.
The food is so good there. So I really, really loved living there. And there was also just, like, a very strong sense of community.
Mm.
So there are a lot of, like, community events, and I volunteered at a few places around town. And I was really good friends with my neighbors, and my
mm.
neighbors had jobs that were totally different from mine. And
yeah.
then we moved to Palo Alto, California, and it's just so different. The two kind of main ways I would summarize how they're different and how that's disappointing is, I guess one in terms of, like, people I meet. So, like, my neighbors in Palo Alto, like, the main, like, I guess types of people that I interact with are either graduate students or
mm-hmm.
associated with the university
mm-hmm.
or they work in tech. And basically no one else.
Mm.
And
yeah.
It's alarming, and it's kind of weird.
Yeah. It's also, like, not that there's two monocultures going on. There's not even two monocultures. In some way, they're kind of overlapping.
Yeah, especially in the, like, a lot, I feel like a lot of the tech community is, like, fed in from, again, air quotes, like, elite universities,
mm.
and, like, now we're at Stanford,
totally.
Which is also this, air quote, elite university,
mm-hmm.
and so there's really just, like, kind of this bubble of, I don't know, people that is just strange. Like, I miss
mm-hmm.
having
mm-hmm.
a friend who's a middle school teacher, and, like, one who, like, works at an insurance company, and, like, another one who, I don't know, works for the parks department. It's just not, I don't know if it's really feasible to, I don't know. I don't know if it's a mix of, like, it's infeasible for people who do certain professions to live in Palo Alto.
Mm. Yeah.
In apartments or homes.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's just, like, the actual population of people is so much, like, tech and university that I'm just meeting a large percentage of those people. I don't know. I'm not
yeah.
really sure. Anyway, so that's like kind of one thing that's I don't love. The second is when I walk down the street in Palo Alto, and I've said this before, I kind of feel like no one cares if I live or die. And like, it sounds really grim, but like in Madison, people used to like joke around and say like, you know, if you see someone broken down on the side of the road with a flat tire, like you have to help them because like, if that person were you and it were the winter, like there's no way you would survive without the goodness of neighbors, which is really nice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get that same feeling here. And I don't know if it's because people really aren't helping each other out, or maybe I'm not interacting with the community as much as I did when I lived in Madison. I don't know if it's because like most of the people who like work in Palo Alto during the day leave at night. So like think about like going to a restaurant or like any interface with like, for instance, like any sort of aspect of the service industry, like more likely than not, those people probably don't like actually live in Palo Alto.
Yeah.
They might commute in.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, there's just like kind of this like no central community feel. Do you feel that? Or
I feel like I totally feel that. I feel that everyone has somewhere else they need to be.
Yeah.
I think that would just sum it up. It's just like wherever that is, it's not somewhere central. It's not like everyone's living in San Francisco. It's just like wherever you are. Like, everyone has somewhere better to be, and they're running late to it.
Yeah.
I think that just describes the, like, emotional feelings of the whole Bay Area.
Yeah, that and, like, just, like, a sense of, like, deep self-involvement.
Mm.
I think I wrote a note to myself, oh, no one cares if you live or die because capitalism. That's what I wrote to myself.
Because if you, so if I'm interpreting this right, like if you, you know, if you get hit by a car on your bike on El Camino, well, you wouldn't be biking on El Camino, but Sand Hill, and no one's going to stop because they're off to go pitch to a venture capital place to go make money.
Mm-hmm.
Probably. Yeah, that makes sense.
That's,
yes.
I think that is, you unpacked it perfectly.
Capitalism.
Yeah, it's just, and that might not be true, but in Madison, I felt like I would, and this, you know, again, could be connected to, like, my state of mind when I lived there, but I would walk down the street, and, like, you'd smile at strangers, and I remember just being like, you're experiencing this moment, I'm experiencing this moment, we're connecting with each other, because, like, we're both looking at this flower on our neighbor's lawn, and,
it's
like,
reminding me of, like, a musical.
Maybe. Yes.
Too.
I've been told I'm very theatrical, but,
no, I think it's great, and, like, what kind of play would living in Palo Alto be?
Oh my gosh, a sad one.
Yeah, no. Very gray.
Very gray.
But it's always sunny in Palo Alto.
It's true.
And we're supposed to be happy that we live here.
Yeah, I know. I am.
Which I struggle with.
Yeah. what do you mean by, do you feel that we're supposed to be happy to live here?
I feel like people who don't live in Palo Alto, and particularly and not California.
Yeah.
I feel like Palo Alto gets lumped into California as this place where there are palm trees and the neighborhoods are safe.
Yeah.
And everyone's happy and there's sunshine all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's happy because maybe they're making money.
Yeah.
And they're sipping like expensive coffee.
Yeah. They've displaced everyone who used to live here.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah. So, I don't know. Like, on paper, not even on paper, on a postcard, Palo Alto, like, in my head is, like, very sunshiny.
Yeah.
But, like, I have a feeling that most people, especially our generation, who can't afford to settle down here, feel very, like,
bleak about it.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to decide how to feel about it. I think I'm trying to do a lot of convincing of myself that, like, there is, like, good to be enjoyed here.
Yeah.
Mostly because I'm going to be here for a few more years, and so I may as well, like, not...
You're trapped.
Yeah, like, I hate
but,
my life.
But yeah. I've been thinking similar.
Yeah. But it is... I don't think this is my forever place.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put it that way, for sure.
Yeah. Also, I would also remark that it seems like a lot of people feel that way.
Ooh.
And not just in our line of work. Like, feels like a lot of people in our generation are like, yeah, this is okay for now. And that sort of feeling feels like everyone's going to leave eventually. So why try to even?
Maybe that's why it feels devoid of community here. Is like there's, if everyone has this kind of mindset of like, this is a temporary place for me, why would I invest energy back into rooting down here? That actually might be why.
That's okay. But I feel like it's also, I'm very like cynical right now.
Okay.
Moving into my fifth year, so just whatever, however.
Yeah, I didn't realize you moved into your fifth year.
I know. Josh dropped all around. I know. It's crazy. But then, so I'm like, oh, my time here is like even more temporary. Right? And I feel like I'm trying to enjoy what time I have left here. But like, yeah, definitely. It feels even less forever.
Yeah.
Forever time.
I'm going to be here for a while.
Yeah. It's nice.
Feeling,
yeah. I remember post-qual just being like, oh, yes, I can buy a plant and settle down and, like, Bay Area equivalent settling is buy an indoor plant.
I haven't bought a plant. But, yeah, I'm trying to enjoy this, yeah, this feeling of, like, okay, I've been here now for 2 years, past quals, oh, my gosh, what a hoot and a half. And then one thing that I'm really trying to be mindful of in the next few weeks and months is, like, it's at the end of the day, for me, it's a job. And, like, it can't be my life. Like, it cannot be the only thing that I do. Mm-hmm. And even though it takes up a lot of hours of my week, I would like to think of myself as a person. And, like, I'm also a grad student, but, like, that's my job, and it doesn't have to be like one of the sole defining features of my identity and what
totally.
I do.
Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for my delicious sesame latte.
Excellent.
Thanks for listening to Life, the University, and Everything, a podcast of mostly academics brewing, sipping, or spilling tea. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or other places that you get your podcasts. If you like the show, leave us a review on iTunes, and also let the universe know on the socials. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at LUE Podcast. Submit questions for our not advice section to lifetheuniversityandeverything@gmail.com. I'm Kat Gonzalez. Tune in next time.